Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today is a moment to start a new Sefer. We're starting Sefer Melachim Beis today. It is 25 Prakim, so this is going to take us about 5 weeks to get through. And there's a lot to learn over here. This is going to take us from towards the beginning of Bayis Rishon to all the way towards the end, to the destruction of Bayis Rishon. That's where the Sefer Melachim Beis spans. This is going to essentially be our timeline of history for all the other later Nevi'im Achronim who we're going to meet along the way. So let's start, just context for those who are joining us right at this moment. We're at this point over here where there's been an attempt of unity between the north and the south kingdom, between the king of the south of Yehuda, whose name was Jehoshaphat, and the king of the north whose name was Ahav. And both of them died. The unity did not last. It was not successful. And now we're dealing with the children. So what we're going to do is we're going to switch backwards and forwards between the two kingdoms. Perek Aleph, which we're focusing on today, is focusing on the northern kingdom, on the kingdom of Israel, who's now under the reigns of Ahaziahu. Ahaziahu is the son of Ahav. And remember that Ahav has a curse on his family. They'll all be wiped out. And it was sort of weighted, so it did not happen during the lifetime of Ahav, but we know that it's waiting to happen to his children. So we really have a shadow over this individual. And Tanakh starts Sefer Melachim Beis with the following verse: Vayiv Shamoav Yisrael Acharei Mos Ahav, that Moav, who up to now was a tax-paying subsidiary to Israel on the east bank of the Jordan, where the country Jordan is today, stopped paying taxes. They started rebelling against Israel. At this point in time, and we will just to understand why it is before going even further. Rashi, the Radak, points out this is opportunistic, because when there's a change of power, they took opportunity of weakness and they attacked. Whereas the Ralbag says it might be even worse than that, because Ahaziah continued in the ways of his father, that in fact weakened Israel spiritually. Because it wasn't just that Ahav was doing it, but that his son continued, that made it even worse. It was a greater indictment, and that's why it happened now, because of a spiritual hole. We actually have external ratification of this episode, because for those who are interested in visiting London, there is something what's called the Mesha Stele, which is a slab of stone which has got engravings on it. They would put plaster on it, and they would engrave out of the wet plaster when it was still wet with a reed in cuneiform. And we have extant Mesha, the king of Moab, who lives at this time, and he describes how Omri, the father of Ahav, took a lot of cities, and how he was helped by Chemosh God, which is his god, to retake these cities. And he describes in pretty good graphic detail how he conquers the cities of Israel. I assaulted the wall and I captured it and killed all the warriors of the city and the well pleasing of Chemosh and Moab. And I removed from it all the spoil and offered it before Chemosh and Kiryas, and I placed therein the men of Siran and the men of Mocharas. And Chemosh said to me, "Go take Nevoi against Israel." I went at night and I fought against it from the break of day till noon, and I took it and I killed all 7,000 men, but not killed women, and I devoted them to Ashtar Chemosh. So we have literally a city-by-city description of conquest, which is all contained in this pasuk of Moab rebelling. So it's much more graphic than the euphemism that Tanakh says. But nonetheless, this is the introduction to this stage. So in the meantime, Ahaziahu, who is the son of Ahav, is not doing too well himself. He gets sick, he's on his bed, and what he does is he sends his messengers to go and ask the Zavuv, Baal Zavuv, which is one of the Philistine gods, to ask if he's going to get better. And off he goes, and in the meantime, Eliyahu gets a message from Hashem to intercept these messengers. And the message he gives to them to return to Ahaziahu is the following: Hamibli ein Elokim b'Yisrael, atem holchim lidrosh b'Baal Zuv Elokehei Ekron. There's no God in Israel. You have to go to Baal Zuv. You have to export your gods. There's no God. The Tanakh is being very sarcastic here. You're not going to get off your bed. Kimos Tomus. You're going to die, because you're not even interested in looking inwards to see if you can fix yourself. So Eliyahu sends that message back, and they walk back into the room, and clearly Ahaziah was not expecting them so fast. And he says, "Why are you here so fast?" And they said, "Well, we met this elderly man, and he told us that, you know, he gave us this message that why do you need to search for Baal Zvuv? Why couldn't you search for God?" And therefore the message that were, you know, and they sort of mumbled the rest of it, that he's going to die. You know, you can imagine being very uncomfortable having to try to give that message back to your king, that the prophet told you you're not going to get off your bed. So he asked about the way this man looked, and they said to him that he was uh, He was an elderly man who was a Balseyar. He had a large beard and he had a leather belt. And he realized that immediately this is Eliyahu. And he sends for him. So in the meantime, Eliyahu is on the top of a mountain, which the Mefarshim actually point out is likely to be Har Carmel, which goes back to the original episode of Eliyahu's involvement at Har Carmel. And the messengers come up. He sends out officers with soldiers, and they say, Hamelech Dibei Reda. Ish Elokim, Hamelech Dibei Reda. The king spoke to you, man of God, come down. And Eliyahu says, if I'm the man of God, then let you be consumed. Fire comes out of heaven and incinerates the entire troop of soldiers. They said, the next group, and the officer says, the king said, come down. And he says, if I'm the man of God, let fire come down. And once again, the fire comes down. We always think of Eliyahu bringing down the fire from heaven to the Korban, but he has another two times he does it in the same place to incinerate these officers. It's almost like Ahaziah was trying to quell the prophecy that Eliyahu gave by killing the messenger. That's what it sounds like he's trying to do, because it's spoken in violent terms, as the Ralbag speaks. It's a brusque attitude in the conversation here. And Eliyahu is not interested. Eliyahu says, if you want to start with me, I'll incinerate you. And finally, the third group comes up, and you can imagine being the third officer in this group, and what you're going to say. And he says very humbly, and he says, you know, you've killed everybody else up to now. Please have mercy on me and my men. You know, we just want to speak to you. And the Malach Hashem tells Eliyahu it's fine to go down, and Eliyahu does go down with him. They appear in front of Ahaziah on his sickbed, and Eliyahu repeats the same message. Because you searched out the gods not of Israel, you're going to die. And that's exactly what happens. The next pasuk is, Vayomos Kidvar Hashem Asher Diber Eliyahu. And he dies. He doesn't have any children, so his brother Yehoram, who's Ben Yehoshaphat, Yehoram, his brother took the throne. There's Yehoram Ben Yehoshaphat is in the kingdom of the south. So we have a Yehoram in the north and a Yehoram in the south, and that's the end of the parak. One thing which is interesting to note about this is that there's no interruption between Eliyahu's saying this prophecy to him and what actually happened in his death. It could be it was instantaneous, but more likely, and what this really says is about the nature of Ahaziah. Ahaziah is the kind of person who doesn't seem to let go. He's not able to change his perspective. Here he is. He knows there's a curse on his family. He knows he's getting sick, but he doesn't go to God. Then he gets his message from Eliyahu. What does he do? He tries to stamp out the message. Then he finally gets the message from Eliyahu unequivocally, explicitly, what Eliyahu was saying. What does he do? He doesn't even listen. There's no reaction. Ahaziah is not able, he's holding on to the sins of his father. He's not able to change. And when he's not able to change, he is in fact wiped out. And this ends the first chapter. It allows us into the gateway into the next set of chapters. Obviously, this is a dark opening, but there's a lot more light to be coming. From the south, at least. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.